The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
I don't think, you know, you don't look at too many games during the season when you have a measuring stick, but also when you do, you want to be full, you know, and they weren't full as well. So you don't really know how to go about that. But, you know, you can always find ways to get better no matter who's in the lineup.
So we'll see them down the line again, and we look forward to it with a whole entire healthy Lakers team. That's what we really wanted. I know everybody wants that. And so I'm looking forward to the challenge and seeing them down the line.
Brooklyn, stand up. You all see Kyrie, he even pulled the mask down because he had to make sure we all heard that message. Stephen A., Max, I'm Molly. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Welcome into Feel Good Friday here on First Take. Fellas, I'm into all of this. I mean, I know we didn't get to see both teams at full strength, but that was still something special, and we will at some point. You heard Kyrie, Brooklyn extending their win streak now to 5. Stephen A., what message did Mr. Irving send?
Well, first of all, Kyrie Irving, I mean, he had moments. He didn't have a big game statistically, but he had moments where he put on the show. He just showed you just the kind of ability that we all know that he has. The kid is spectacular. There's no way around that. Yes, they did not have Kevin Durant, and the Los Angeles Lakers did not have Anthony Davis. But watching this game, the message that I peeled from it is that, as I said before, the Brooklyn Nets are coming out of the Eastern Conference. They will be in the NBA Finals, barring any significant injuries. And as far as I'm concerned, last night to me said to me that they should be the championship favorites. The Brooklyn Nets should be the favorites to win the world championship. The questionable health of Anthony Davis combined with the way the offense is playing, the fluidity, the distribution of the basketball, the Joe Harrises of the world in the starting lineup, the Jeff Green, how you could go small the way Brooklyn did last night. You know, Bruce Brown, along with Joe Harris, along with Kyrie and James Harden, with Jeff Green playing the center spot. You got four or five guys on the floor that are all a threat from three-point range. They went relatively small, and they definitely had an advantage over the Los Angeles Lakers in the first quarter because LeBron obviously only had 7 points in the first quarter. Couldn't really get it going. You expected him to attack from the interior all night long. He did it enough, but in the same breath, he was still struggling from three-point range, which was predictable. In the end, I'm just looking at the Brooklyn Nets right now and the way they're getting others involved, the Joe Harrises, the Jeff Greens of the world, the Landry Shamets of the world, and what they can do from the perimeter, and the fact that these guys are literally feeding the basketball. You see the effect that Steve Nash and Mike D'Antoni, the offensive minds that they have, coming into play here. And by the way, they get defensive stops at times when they need them as well. So I look at all of that, and I'm willing to declare here today that the Brooklyn Nets should be the favorites to win the chip. They should be the favorites to win it all. That's where I'm at right now. That's what I peered from last night.
The message that Kyrie and Harden sent to LeBron last night was real, recognize real. Game, recognize game. And when Kyrie, remember back, Stephen A., when Kyrie made the comments about KD and how for the first time at the end of a game, he sees another dude who, he wasn't lying. What he's showing is he wasn't lying. I think he ignored LeBron's judgment. I'd still rather have the ball in LeBron's hands with everything he can do with the ball, including score. But what Kyrie was talking about is a guy he trusts in that moment to hit a shot from anywhere, just like he can. Harden, too. James Harden has played with some great players. He was too young to know how to be great with other great players when he was first in OKC. That's why he and Westbrook couldn't share the floor. That's why I used him as a sixth man. And he wasn't very good there either when the pressure mounted. And later in Houston, when he got Chris Paul, let's not forget, by the time the playoffs rolled around, Chris Paul was probably off a step, probably missed it because of injuries. It made him look like he was declining. And Westbrook is not a shooter to begin with. This is the first time James Harden and Kyrie Irving are playing. Last night it was with one other guy, but when KD is healthy, it's two other guys who are just like them that way, who they trust to hit a big shot from anywhere on the court at any given time, especially when it matters. And you saw it. You know, you brought up Kyrie Irving. The numbers don't tell the story from Kyrie's game yesterday. Yes, we showed some highlights. He hit some very tough shots late. But we know his skill level. He can do that. But it was Kyrie's willingness to move the ball. Not just the assist, but the hockey assist. The assist that led to the assist. The pass that led to the assist. The way they move the ball unselfishly. James Harden, too. His court vision. I knew James Harden could pass, but oh, my God, the court vision he's shown since he's come to the Nets. It's the same sort of thing. These guys see game, recognize game. That dude's just like me. Can get his own shot at any time as well as anyone who ever lived and can hit it from anywhere as well as anyone who ever lived. You went through the Nets roster, Stephen A. What about TLC in the corner, right? Their guys are wide open because of these players' gravity and their unselfish play. And the message they sent to LeBron, of course, is we're coming, but it's because game recognized game. They're playing unselfish basketball.
Well, I just disagree with you. I think that's engagement and hyperbole, and it's unnecessary because the fact of the matter is that LeBron James, who doesn't know that James Harden has game? Who doesn't know that Kyrie Irving has game? LeBron knows it because Kyrie helped to win the championship. So to me, that's nothing new. What's new to me is the players that are making a contribution. The level of unselfishness, Kyrie Irving and James Harden definitely needs to be given a lot of credit. And then we need to engage in a little history here. When James Harden was in Oklahoma City, although he was relatively young, you had people who believed that he was a better point guard than Russell Westbrook. Not a better overall talent, because we didn't see the scoring machine that James Harden would ultimately become in Houston, but they actually thought that he was a better point guard, that he made better decisions at the point guard spot, even when he was young and in Oklahoma City, coming off the bench for the Thunder. So we understand that James Harden, it's not a surprise that he has that court vision. It's not a surprise that he has those point guard skills. The surprise was what he became offensively once he arrived in Houston as the number one option. In the case of Kyrie Irving, the level of unselfishness has to be applauded, but also it comes down to what these brothers are doing. TLC's making shots. Joe Harris hit 6 or 7 threes last night. Landry Shamet, he hit 2 or 3 threes. They are threats from the perimeter. You can put the Brooklyn Nets can actually go 8 or 9 deep. It's not just about the big three. They can go 8 or 9 deep because you got guys. Because you got guys that can shoot. And at all times, they can put one, in most situations, 2 guys on the floor you have to guard to free up those shooters. Brooklyn's the favorite right now. They're the favorites right now.
I don't think they're the favorite yet. They have to show that they can play defense. Although they've also showed you're going to have to outscore them. The Lakers are going to have to score 120, 130 points a game. There are teams in the NBA right now better than them because they play defense, including the Lakers and the Jazz. But what they did show is the Lakers are going to have to figure out where that 120, 130 is going to come from. Mm-hmm. But let me be very clear, Stephen A. The message they sent to LeBron is not we have game. You know, like LeBron knows that. It's that game recognize game. That this is not the same old Kyrie. This is not the same old Harden we've seen in the past. We know Harden could play point guard, but a lot of times it was same thing with Kyrie. Dribble, 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 dribble. When they can't find their own shot, they get it to a teammate. But that's because they've never played with another dude like them. And now they're playing with 2 others. And the question's not Durant. We know Durant's impossible. We know that. The question was, how are these 2 going to coexist in the same backcourt? And what they've shown is, because game recognized game, they are willing to do what it takes to play unselfishly, to sacrifice touches, to sacrifice shots, to give up responsibility because they trust their teammate in a way they never have. That's the message.
Max, Kyrie looks the same as he looked in Cleveland. LeBron was handling the ball. Kyrie was off the ball. Kyrie was a scoring machine. Kyrie was a scoring machine, putting up buckets big time, but deferred to some degree to LeBron James and what LeBron James and Ty Lue wanted to do. Now, James Harden's a little bit different, but Kyrie Irving is doing what he did in Cleveland. He didn't do it in Boston, but he did do it in Cleveland when they won a chip.
To an extent, because he was a young guy on the way up who'd never won before, and he was playing with a player who people are arguing is the greatest of all time. And even then, we're starting to talk about, is he rival after the win against the Warriors at Oracle in 2016, is he rivaling Michael Jordan? That's when Kyrie played with him as a young player. That's entirely different. Forcing his way out of town, not really being able to get along with others on the court in Boston because he played with good players but not great ones, and now showing up at this point and sharing a backcourt with Harden. That's a
story. You're wrong. The only difference between Kyrie now and Kyrie then is that Kyrie did it begrudgingly in Cleveland. Now he's happy because he's with a teammate he wants to team with in Kevin Durant and James Harden. He didn't want to be there with LeBron. He wants to be here in Brooklyn with Kyrie, with KD and and Harden. That's the only difference. But the game is similar.
All right, I'll wrap it up by saying this. The Nets are 10-1 currently against teams above 500. That's the best such record in the NBA, so they're certainly playing up to the competition. Fellas, let's get to the breaking news we had yesterday because we didn't really get to dive into it. It was towards the end of the show, and you know what that is. It was Carson Wentz. So here's the deal. The Eagles have agreed to trade him to the Colts for a 2021 third-round pick, a conditional 2022 second-round pick that could turn into a first. That according to Chris Mortensen and Adam Schefter. Max? I know you and Carson Wentz have a special relationship, so tell me this. Do you think the Eagles are the losers in this deal?
I can't believe that's a question. Of course they're the winners here. Or they are certainly a winner here. The Eagles took a contract.
Wait, I said are the Eagles the losers?
No, they're the winners. They're the winners. They're not the losers. They're the winners. Okay. They had a contract that looked immovable to me. They had a guy who I pointed out, health. They had a guy who I pointed out through the second half of 2019 was regressing shockingly. And then we saw it continue in 2020 to the point where he became the worst starter at the position in football. He was the worst quarterback in the NFL, the worst starting quarterback. And then, you know what happens to the worst starting quarterback in the NFL? They lose their job. He was so bad, he was the worst starter, and then he wasn't a starter anymore. That's how bad he was. And they have that contract, his guy in his fifth year, who was so bad that he lost his job. And that guy has an elite contract. He has the contract of a top five quarterback. He has the contract of a guy who's not only supposed to not make as many mistakes as he did, not be the worst guy in the league, not lose his job. He has the contract of a guy who's so good he's supposed to make up for other deficiencies on your team. That's why you're able to pay him that money. That's the, you know, Donovan McNabb type thing, Stephen A., in Philadelphia. And when that guy is the worst starter in the league and loses his job, how do you even move that deal? They moved the deal and got a third-round pick this season. I want to point out, they couldn't even get a second-round pick this season. But they did get a third, and they have a conditional second-round pick where if Wentz doesn't lose his job in Indianapolis, he is going to wind up, they're going to wind up with a first. Of course they didn't lose the deal, Stephen A. They took a guy who's going to take this player and got a third and a second, potentially a first. That's a win.
I think you're completely wrong about this on several fronts. Number one, we don't know how good the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be because Jalen Hurts only completed 52% of his passes, and we don't know what kind of quarterback he's going to be. He wasn't lights out. He was 1-3 as a starter. He certainly showed potential. He certainly had big plays. Obviously, he's got wheels. He can move without the ball. He can run the football. And as a result, he galvanized the troops to some degree. But in the end, we don't know what the hell the Philadelphia Eagles are going to be, which is something we'll get into later. But let's look at the Indianapolis Colts. They were a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. They lose a quarterback in Phil Rivers that threw for over 4,000 yards, 24 touchdowns and 11 interceptions, but he was a relatively stationary target, very immobile. He wasn't a threat to run the football against anybody. Got rid of the ball relatively quickly. We'll give him credit for that. But basically, he was on the tail end of his career, which is proof because he just retired. Having said all of that, what do you have? You have a running game and led by Jonathan Taylor, who's a 1,000-yard rusher. You've got guys like T.Y. Hilton and Pittman Jr. and others that are good receivers. You have an offensive line that is considered elite. Even in a down year based on injuries, they were still a top seven offensive line in the game. And Carson Wentz is coming from a team where he was sacked 50 times, a team that surrendered 65 sacks. That is the Philadelphia Eagles. Albeit to some degree it was his fault because he held onto the ball too damn long. But clearly anybody will tell you that the Eagles' offensive line was highly suspect, which is something even you pointed out before. They gave up 65 sacks last year, 50 at the hands of Carson Wentz. And he is going to a team that surrendered 19 sacks the entire season. the entire season. And I think they were one of the top teams in terms of hits allowed on their quarterback because it was like 32 or less, something around that number. This offensive line led by that monster, Quentin Nelson. I mean, this is who they are. They protect. They run block. They pass protect. This is what they do. And so when you look at it from that perspective and you look at the pieces that they have, and they were just in the playoffs, and then you look at the fact that Carson Wentz is being reunited with Frank Reich, the offensive coordinator in 2017, last time they were together, which was 3 years ago, what did he do? They were 11-2, and Carson Wentz was an MVP candidate. I look at all of those things, and I say the Indianapolis Colts won with this because I don't expect Carson Wentz to go there and stink up the joint because he'll have a better coach, he'll be in a better situation, he'll be surrounded by better players,
okay,
and I think as
questions.
A result, he will resurrect his career to some
yes
degree
no
anyway.
Answers. Yes or no answers. Let me ask you some questions. Is the Eagles' offensive line the Colts' offensive line?
No.
Does Frank Reich coach the Eagles?
Does he coach the Eagles? No, he coaches the
right.
Colts.
Right. So, like, that's the situation. But, right, the Eagles don't have that stuff. So even if you're right, I agree that you could take a flyer on Carson Wentz if you're the Colts because you do have the, like, if Carson Wentz can't make it work in Indianapolis, he can't make it work. But they have a reclamation project on their hands. They have a coach who believes he knows how to do it because he's worked with them before when he was very good. As you mentioned, they have an offensive line anchored by one of the best guards on the offensive line I've ever seen in Quentin Nelson. There's like a force field around him when he plays. No one can come within 10 yards of him, apparently, is the rule. Like, he is unbelievable, and that line is very good. You mentioned the running game. You mentioned a lot of stuff. The Eagles don't have those things. The Eagles don't have them. So Carson Wentz doesn't work there. He may not work in Indianapolis, but as you point out, they have a shot. But he doesn't work in Philly. So what did the Eagles wind up getting for a guy who simply doesn't work there? And by the way, divided the locker room. You know, was talking to the press, or certainly whether or not he was leaking, I find it hard to believe he wasn't, when it would come out, Carson Wentz will demand a trade. He has no interest in being a backup. He'll want to trade if he's a backup. The day that Hurts is starting for the first time in the NFL. That kind of undermining influence in the locker room, in addition to a situation that doesn't work given the team, means the Eagles got to get rid of him. They got to get out from under that deal, right? So the fact that they were able to do it is one thing. The fact that if it works for the Colts, as you suggest it could, or that maybe even that is likely, the Eagles are going to get a third and a first? Oh, my God. I thought they were going to have to give up
why
stuff
they,
to move
why
that
would they
contract.
Get a first? Why would they get a first?
Because it's a conditional second. The condition is, remember when we were joking about this yesterday, what are the conditions? The condition is, I think, 70 or 75% of the snaps. In other words, if Carson Wentz stays healthy and keeps the starting job, that second turns into a first. Mm-hmm. And like so... And even if it doesn't, a third and a second? So, Stephen A., even if they don't draft a quarterback, if they say, let's give Hurts a look for a year without a quarterback competition, maybe we'll just bring in a veteran starter to compete with Jalen Hurts, they still have draft capital to draft a quarterback so, next year if they
yeah,
want.
Yeah, yeah, but what you're doing is making the case that the Eagles are justified in letting go of Carson Wentz. Nobody's disagreeing with that. But when the question is being asked, are the Eagles losers in a Wentz trade, I'm comparing them to the benefit that the Colts get from it. And if the Colts get a starting quarterback who shines and leads them to the playoffs and potentially Super Bowl contention because they're one of the top teams in the AFC, then I consider that a win. Even though the Eagles were absolutely right in getting rid of Wentz because they don't have the personnel that the Indianapolis Colts have, it still doesn't negate the fact that the Colts ended up better off because they're going to be a better team. They're going to look better. They're going to be in a postseason, and they're going to have a quarterback who's age 28 and moving forward because they got the right coach in place to coach him and the right organization led by Chris Ballard to oversee him.
You're
I think that's
Wentz.
What you're answering the question.
Yep, you're betting on Wentz, and that's possible.
I'm betting on the Colts.
I'm betting on the Colts. Well, except that Wentz really does have, like, Reich and DeFilippo reportedly thought they needed to build him back up from the ground up.
Yeah.
So if they can
doesn't
do that.
Doesn't mean they're better
yes.
off than the Colts.
If they can't, they're better, off with Philip Rivers.
There's an important note I want to mention before we close out here. The Eagles are now on the hook for $33 million. That's the biggest dead cap hit after trading a quarterback in NFL history. Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
In celebration of Black History Month, First Take is bringing you on an HBCU tour. Each Wednesday in February, we're checking in with a different school. Next Wednesday, the final stop will be Jackson State. JSU head coach, my guy, Deion Sanders. You look good, you feel good, you feel good, you play good, you play good. You know what it is. Tune in next Wednesday right here, First Take. Meanwhile, many looked at Philly with a side eye when they drafted Jalen Hurts in the second round last year after breaking the bank to pay Carson Wentz. Now it might not seem so foolish. On that note, we bring in Super Bowl champ Ryan Clark. RC, top of the morning to you. You know the drill.
What's up, Molly?
I will get to you last after the fellas. Hey, hey, happy Friday to you. Hope you have a wonderful weekend here. Max, you're up. This is your specialty. Do the Eagles have the worst quarterback situation in the NFC East? Because there's a lot of fluidity there in that division.
Not anymore. I mean, if Carson Wentz was still on the team, yeah, because for some reason they were attached to this guy. Maybe it was that awful contract. But he was undermining Jalen Hurts, day of starts. He was fracturing the locker room. He was the worst starting quarterback in football all of last year until he was so bad, he was no longer a starter. That's what happens to the last guy. He's a backup and causing a problem, but they're out of that now. And we'll see what we have with Jalen Hurts and whether they draft someone or sign someone, bring in someone to compete. We'll see, but I don't think you can call it the worst anymore. We know that if Dak Prescott's back with the Cowboys, that's the best. But you can't say the Eagles are worse off than Washington or the New York Football Giants. Washington, as of right now, their starter is going to be Heinicke, who they signed to a backup contract. You know why? He's a backup quarterback, level guy. They're hoping he could maybe be more if they don't find someone better. And the Giants are a congenitally conservative organization who drafted a quarterback, but almost everyone considered it a reach at sixth overall in Daniel Jones, who showed some promise as a rookie, was 18th in QBR as a rookie. Hey, if he can figure out his turnover problem and get a little better in certain areas. But he regressed, if anything, in his second year. Certainly, he didn't get better. He's 20th overall in QBR. And generally, things were down. His completion percentage barely nudged up. Far fewer touchdowns, more interceptions, a much worse touchdown interception ratio. And generally just didn't show, you know, year two is supposed to be the development year. He certainly did not show that. And yet the Giants, if you ask around the league, they ain't planning on moving on from Daniel Jones. That's their guy. So the fact that they are that way and they're kind of reflexively conservative about this, we're going to stick with Daniel Jones. Think about how long it took him to get rid of Eli after it was clear that he was cooked. Means the Giants could have a worse quarterback situation if Jones continues to do what he's doing, which is not show growth. Washington could also have a worse quarterback situation. I don't look at Heinicke or Jones and say, those guys are going to be better than Hurts. I don't know, but I do know that Philadelphia is out of the woods with the Carson Wentz situation. And that automatically means that they don't automatically have the worst QB situation in the NFC East.
I think they do. First of all, they only got one quarterback, and it's a guy that only completed 52% of his passes. I like Jalen Hurts. I like the potential, but we don't know if he's ready yet. That's number one. Number two, I mean, we don't know about their coach and what he's going to bring to the table as well. Doug Peterson is no longer there, and they've got a rookie head coach, so we'll see what he does. Number three, I look at a situation when I think about the rest of the NFC. I like Taylor Heineke. I mean, I only saw him one game, but you throw for 306 yards in a playoff game against Tampa's defense led by Todd Bowles and those boys. I'm going to have respect for you, and I'm not going to be a prisoner of the moment per se, but I did see potential. I did see moxie, and as far as I'm concerned, if you're dealing with tougher circumstances, although people get back and they watch film and they study you a little bit better and you don't catch them by surprise, that still was a tough situation for him to be in and for him to show up and play the way that he played, albeit for one game. Hell, that was more than Dwayne Haskins did in 2 years in the nation's capital. So I'm looking at it from that perspective. I'm also looking at the return of Alex Smith potentially. And I'm saying, excuse me, you've got some veteran leadership and you've got stability there with Ron Rivera as your coach. Dallas is Dallas. We understand that. But Dak Prescott is expected to come back, and Andy Dalton was a starter in the NFL for years in Cincinnati before he ended up in Dallas, so that's not a god-awful situation if they fix some of the parts around them. You look at the New York Giants with Daniel Jones, not impressed. I get all of that, but Saquon Barkley wasn't there. You know, what receivers did you have? I mean, and even though we are looking at Joe Judge, we saw a lot of promise. We saw a level of stability. We saw them improving each and every single game. We saw him suffering through some injuries, so there was some inconsistency here. He was in and he was out, etc. I think the jury is still out on Daniel Jones. All I'm trying to say is that Jalen Hurts can end up proving all of us wrong, and I hope that he is. I'm rooting for the brother. But at this particular moment in time, with the $33 million in dead cap space for the Philadelphia Eagles, with the exit of Carson Wentz, and having only Jalen Hurts to rely upon, and having a new coach in tow in play there and what have you, I'm just looking at it and saying it's a tough situation for anybody to deal with, let alone a quarterback in just his second year in the National Football League. I think at this particular moment in time, it is plausible to look at the Philadelphia Eagles and say they have the worst quarterback situation of anybody in the NFC East.
Nope, they do not. Because sometimes you need people to leave you, Stephen A. There are times we are tied to people and those people keep dragging us down. Those people are anchors that are sinking our ships. And that's what Carson Wentz was. And so now, yeah, it's only one dude in the room. It's a better dude than they had before Carson Wentz left. And now you do have an opportunity, if you're Sirianni, to say, okay, I'm going to evaluate Jalen Hurts, who I believe is a good NFL starter. I don't think he's a great NFL starter, but I believe he's a good NFL starter. I believe he is better than Taylor Heineke. I believe that he is better than Daniel Jones. And so if you have that situation, you say we can go out and add some veteran backup leadership in this locker room and add a veteran to the quarterback room. And if we look in the draft and say Trey Lance falls to us and we just absolutely love him, or Justin Fields and we just absolutely love him, then you take him. If not, you take a player at six that makes this team better, and you move forward with Jalen Hurts. You're speaking about Taylor Heineke and what he did against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in one game before there was film on him. It was impressive, right? He played hard. There was moxie. But think about the first 2.5 games for Jalen Hurts. That was playing the New Orleans Saints, who had an excellent defense. You go to Arizona and you go toe-to-toe with Kyler Murray. And for the first half of the Dallas Cowboy games, he played extremely well. And so I think right now the Philadelphia Eagles are in a better position from just their quarterback room, from the guy they have right now that's going to start, than two of the other teams in the division. Obviously, if Dak Prescott's the starting quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, they are in the best position. But for the Philadelphia Eagles to be rid of Carson Wentz, to not have that particular quarterback controversy or that particular quarterback competition, that puts the Philadelphia Eagles in a better place as far as the locker room is concerned. And I believe that Jalen Hurts is a good enough starter to put you ahead of the Washington Football Team and the New York Giants.
Well, I want to be very, very clear. I'm not saying that Carson Wentz's exit is a bad thing for the Philadelphia Eagles. I'm not saying they're worst off. I'm just saying, to answer the question directly, if you compare the Eagles situation to everybody else within the division, I think at this particular moment in time, the Eagles still have the worst situation. We'll see whether or not I'm wrong as the season, once next season rolls around.
Look, Jalen Hurts did things, let's not forget, and it's not just catching teams unawares. He did things like, no, what was it? He had the game with 300 passing yards, like 60-something rushing yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions, behind. Just remember how the offense looked when he took over, even when they weren't winning because it wasn't a good team. The offense looked so much better when he was under center versus Carson Wentz. And it was the same offensive line. It was the same thing. Well, because he was moving around. Carson Wentz can move around. No, Jalen Hurts is willing to run the coach's offense. Jalen Hurts, if you look at him in between, you know, like, Jalen Hurts makes a mistake. He's not out there sulking or pouting. He's looking to get better. He's a promising young player. We don't know what he is. But if you want to take him and Daniel Jones, who has a much longer track record in the NFL that suggests maybe there's limited upside there, and he's a bottom third type starting quarterback right now, and Heinicke, I don't think you can say the Eagles are worse off. And to really take it further, Stephen A., the Giants aren't looking at quarterback. That's the problem. The Eagles have Hurts, but they're still looking. So there's an active chance to get better. Whereas the Giants are sitting back saying, this is our dude.
Yeah. Well, and the other piece is this. When you talk about Jalen Hurts compared to Carson Wentz, if we're going to, you know, kind of end this and see who Jalen Hurts was, they averaged 5.73 yards a play with Hurts, 4.7 with Carson Wentz. Now, if you take that equivalent, that's about the New Orleans Saints offense compared to the New York Jets offense with the difference in quarterbacks. That's the difference that Jalen Hurts made at quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles last year, who we knew were beat up on the offensive line, had injuries in the backfield, and also weren't great at the skill position. The dude is a good NFL starter, so you at least have that as a starting point as you're looking to add to the quarterback room.
Mm-hmm. All right, RC, I'm being told that you're a one-hit wonder today because you got places to be. But I like the look for a Friday. You're ready to go straight from television to happy hour. I tried to pull out the same thing.
Sure.
Appreciate you. We will talk to you next week. You listen, me and RC are a little loud today, but we can handle it.
We
can pull it off.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5x miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
First Take fans, listen up. Have you heard you can listen to episodes of this very show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership? That's right. All your favorite First Take episodes can be heard on Amazon Music ad-free. But that's not all. You can listen to other top podcasts like The Low Post and PTI ad-free as well. They also have favorite shows like The Daily, Part of My Take, and Up First, all without ads. You know what this means? Uninterrupted listening, so no more cliffhangers. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts, so we know they definitely have something for you. And it's already included in your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/First Take. That's Amazon.com/First Take to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Speaking of the NBA, the reigning MVP Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Bucks have been struggling. Last night, losing their fifth straight at home to the Raptors. Giannis, what's the deal?
I'm not frustrated. It's part of it. You know, we're learning. We're trying to get better. I like facing adversity. I like being down, being knocked down, you know, because that's the only way you improve.
Something very likable about Giannis' whole energy. Stephen A., what's wrong with the Bucks?
Well, right now, their defense is ranked like 20th in the National Basketball Association. We're not accustomed to seeing a Mike Budenholzer team struggle defensively. And clearly, injury to Jrue Holiday doesn't help matters because, obviously, he's an elite defender in this game. We understand that. The flip side to it is that if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, yeah, you opened your mouth and messed up, and as a result, nixed the deal that would have landed you Bogdanovich. And that was a huge, huge loss for them because if he were on this team with Jrue Holiday, I think we'd be speaking a little bit differently about Milwaukee right now, but he's not. You still have Jrue Holiday. You've got Giannis. You've got Chris Middleton and the rest of the crew, and you've lost five straight. You're middle of the pack, and I think that And I don't expect that things will continue to go this way, Max. I'm not trying to say that, nor am I trying to endorse what I'm about to acknowledge. And that is this. I think Mike Budenholzer, the coach, could be in trouble. At some point in time, here's the reality of the situation. Mike Budenholzer, coach of the year in Atlanta, coach of the year in Milwaukee. I think he's an exceptional coach personally. He clearly knows what he's doing. But in the end, come postseason time, what do you have to show for it? And at the end of the day, when you've got Giannis Antetokounmpo and you just signed him to this exorbitant deal, and you've got Chris Middleton in tow, and you've got Jrue Holiday in tow and what have you, there are expectations. You went to the Eastern Conference Finals against Toronto a couple of years ago. You were up 2-0. Wet the bed, lost four straight. Last year in the bubble, you got blitzed by a Miami squad in five games. Now you're struggling again. At some point in time, people are going to look at Giannis Antetokounmpo, and they're going to sit up there and say, you got the Greek freak here. What the hell are you going to do with it? We're not just interested in getting to the regular season and going home. We want to really, really make a championship push, and questions are going to be asked whether or not Mike Budenholzer is that guy. I want to emphasize, I'm not one of those people. I believe in the man. I like him a lot. I think he's an exceptional coach, etc. But you do have a bunch of people clamoring for opportunities to coach a talent like Giannis Antetokounmpo. It's the world of professional sports. And when you've had opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to get it done, and not only do you come up short, but you seem to be regressing. You lose in the conference finals one year. You lose in the semifinals the next. Now you're sitting there and we're talking about Brooklyn and Philadelphia, and we're not even talking about you. If that trend continues, if you're the Milwaukee Bucks, you spent all the money you can spend. Now it gets to a point where we got to look in another direction because we're supposed to have the personnel that's suited for better than this. And that means you're going to look in the direction of the coach.
I want to talk about Budenholzer because in Atlanta they won 60 games, but Stephen A., they didn't have a superstar on that team. So they flamed out in the playoffs, probably worse than they ought to have flamed out. But yes, we understand playoffs.
They got swept by LeBron. They got swept by LeBron.
And it's superstar time. You don't have a guy like that. But he has a guy like that in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really have a second banana good enough. I keep saying the dominant big needs a guy who's not a big who's just as good as him. Shaq needed Kobe and a prime D-Wade. Even Penny wasn't good enough. Kareem needed Oscar Robertson and Magic Johnson. Got no championships without them. Giannis needs a guy like that. I don't know if Jrue Holiday is that kind of player, but he's an excellent player. And the losing streak coincides with his absence because of COVID protocol, right? So that's the short answer. Jrue Holiday is not there. But I want to talk about Budenholzer because I think what you're talking about is what we're seeing from the Bucks right now. Budenholzer's doing something that requires real intestinal fortitude here. He's heard, I'm sure, what people are saying. And not only that, he sees what they're saying is correct. If you can win 60-plus games in the regular season, why are you getting bounced out? Even if you don't win the championship, before you ought to get bounced out in the playoffs, because the playoffs are different. And what he's decided is, look, we can't play offense and defense the same way we've been doing it. It doesn't work given the personnel we have, not to the tune of a championship or even getting to a championship, getting to the finals. So what is he doing? He's making changes, using the regular season to experiment, to see if he can make those changes. On offense, Giannis is not initiating everything. So that takes some getting used to, particularly when Jrue Holiday is not there. On defense, they're trying to learn how to switch. They're not funneling everything to Giannis and Brooke Lopez. And that takes time to learn. If you watch the Bucks, you see a lack of urgency in terms of the way they play. And I was thinking about this a lot, like of all the teams who should be playing with urgency, this team has flamed out in the playoffs a couple years in a row now. Why? And it's not exactly a lack of urgency. It's that they're in a learning phase. They're in an experimental learning phase on both sides of the ball, on offense and on defense. They're trying to figure out, can we be effective switching, not funneling everything to our bigs? And can we run a championship caliber offense when Giannis isn't the guy doing all of the initiating on offense? So all the stuff that comes easy to them, reflect, you know, quickly to them, that's muscle memory to them because they've been doing it, that's not there as much. And what's there in place is, hey, let's try this, let's try that, let's see what works. I think that's what's happening. Budenholzer's doing what you're saying. He's trying to figure it out in the playoffs. He's using the regular season to do it.
Well, I appreciate your explanation. My response is no one's going to give a damn when all is said and done. This is a man that is a two-time coach of the year. He was one coach of the year in 2014, 2015, winning 60 games in Atlanta. 2018, 2019, he won 60 games in Milwaukee. He's won 71% of his games in Milwaukee over the last 3 years. He's won 58% of his games in his career. He's taken his team to the playoffs 6 times in 8 years. All of those things are recognized after serving for 2 decades as an assistant to the great Greg Popovich. We know that Mike Budenholzer can coach. We understand that he's an exceptional coach. And I think Milwaukee knows that, and Milwaukee's happy to have him. I'm just saying that when you're a small market team, at least to some degree, and you went out and you've spent this money on a superstar talent like Giannis Antetokounmpo, and you've put pieces around him that you believe should have you in title contention, if you continue to come up short, and you're going in the wrong direction, meaning that you're going to the conference finals one year and then you don't make it the next couple of years, et cetera, somebody's going to look at the coach because they have no choice.
Yeah.
Because there's nowhere else to look.
And he's trying to do something about it.
He's trying to do something about it. But it better work, Max. That's what I'm saying. It better work.
So what's really wrong with Giannis and the Bucks is they don't have Bradley Beal on that team. They did as well as they thought they could do. They didn't get Chris Paul. They got Drew Holiday.
Well, I told you that. Hold on.
Who's a very good player. But
I told you that before. You didn't want to listen. I told you that before. You didn't want to listen. You was calling Giannis the best player in the world, and then he went to from three to number five in four, or one number one to number five in 4 days. I told you the brother needed another shooter. You didn't want to listen.
Everyone
you said he's
someone.
Enough.
Everyone
and I said
needs perimeter shooters going to catch that.
And they went from
you didn't want to listen.
Winning five straight now by double digits to losing five straight.